Well, good morning.
Good morning.
So in case you didn't catch it, my name's Tina Chen. Aaron got that in at the end. And I'm just delighted to be here to welcome you to the White House. I want to start by thanking Jordan for opening us up. Jordan, you know, I may be the executive director, but Jordan Brooks and Kalisha DeSouce in the back of the room are where all the work gets done in the building. I want to really thank our Small Business Administrator, Maria Contreras-Sweet, who is a dear friend, has become a colleague in arms on this issue and has been such an outspoken advocate for small business owners, for women-owned businesses, for minority-owned businesses. So thank you very much, Maria, for everything you've done, and Aaron and your team. And to Jane, we're one at Dermalogica, and Natalie, I'm so delighted to have you guys here and to talk about your new partnership here and agreement with SBA to sort of focus on vocational entrepreneurship. I first met you guys, it was a while back, and when you hear what Dermalogica is doing, you will be inspired as well. There's sort of what their business model is, what that means for the future of the untapped resource that we have around the country, not just women entrepreneurs, but women who don't even see themselves as entrepreneurs yet, and how we can give them the vocational training that gets them into that space. It's an exciting new way that we are going to expand the reach of women-owned businesses. We've already done a lot in this administration, and I want to take a moment just to reflect back on some of those accomplishments over the last 8 years. You know, we know that today that women make up 29% of U.S. business owners, and it's on the rise. I'm particularly proud of the fact that between 2007 and 2012, that U.S. business ownership for women rose by 27.5%. We also know from the data that women-owned businesses increased their receipts by 35% during that time period. They now produce, you know, $1.6 trillion in sales. All right, let's just pause for a moment. $1.6 trillion in sales by women-owned businesses in the United States. We, you know, since the day we walked into this building, you know, almost eight years ago, making good on the promise that had been 10 years in the making of increasing women's, you know, small business women's share of federal contracting to the goal of 5%, you know, was a big part of what we did. We needed to change the rule that had languished since the Clinton administration on making sure that women-owned businesses got a fair level playing field when they competed for federal contracts. I'm really proud to say that that work paid off, and that this last year we crossed that 5% threshold for women-owned businesses receiving federal contracts. 5% may be a low percentage number. It's a really big dollar amount given the amount of federal contracting that goes on. It was a huge achievement to reach that goal. And thank you, Maria, for your leadership on getting that done. It was terrific. It was terrific. Thank you. But we also know that, you know, that only 10.5% of America's women own businesses. So this is still remains a huge untapped resource. This is how we create jobs. We know that small businesses are the engines of job growth. And we know that the untapped resource of women entrepreneurship, their energy, their skills, their drive, their talent, you know, is all just waiting there. And I am very, very proud of the foundation that we have laid in the Obama administration on this work. And you see the fruits of that work in this data and in these numbers. But it's more than just data, right? And some of you all in this room represent folks who are working with these women and are advocating for these women, and you are these women. And your stories as women who have, you know, been a single mom and have now owned, you know, grown a business, you know, who now employs 30 people, you know, small restaurateurs who, you know, are the people who are able to, you know, give paid leave to all their workers and, you know, and still, you know, have a business that's profitable because their workers are as invested in that restaurant as a restaurant owner is. You're leading the way, and those stories are so important. So I want to encourage you to keep telling those stories, to keep telling and spreading the word about the promise of women-owned businesses and how they need to be supported and how they can grow and how when you support them and you grow them, that the benefits accrue to everyone. to everyone in the community, to everyone in our country, I will say to everyone in the world, because women's entrepreneurship, it's Global Entrepreneurship Week, and it's not just a promise that can be fulfilled here in the United States. It is a promise that will make progress happen around the world. And we have built a foundation that can continue. So I'm going to urge all of you, as we close out our administration, to stay strong on this, to keep advocating for it, to keep working with those women, the best example of a good idea is to make it work and make it succeed, and it can succeed inside in government and outside of government. So please continue to do that work. We stand with you to do that, and I also want to, in closing, just acknowledge all of you who have worked with the Council of Women and Girls for the last 8 years. You know, this was an idea that was new when we started it. In March of 2009, could you just do something that had not a single office in the White House, but folks spread all across the federal government, and I'm pretty proud to say that I think it did work. I think we now have demonstrated that focusing on women and girls, whether you're the Department of Transportation or the Department of Defense, as well as Small Business Administration and Labor and Health and Human Services, that accrues benefits for everyone, and that we have changed the DNA of the federal government, as I used to say when we started this. That was our goal, was to change the DNA of the federal government so everyone always thought about women and girls and what they do, whether it's hiring and promotion, whether it's in the policies they do, whether it's in the grants that they give out. And I think that has fundamentally changed and isn't going back. So I am, once again, proud of that work, proud of our partnership with all of you. So I want to close by thanking you for the hard work you all have done with us the last 8 years, that work I know you're going to continue to do, and importantly, given the nature of today's conversation, the lives of individual women that you are changing today and that you will continue to change. So have a wonderful session this morning. Thank you very much for everything.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Tina. And to continue this conversation, I want to invite Jane Rowan and Administrator Contreras Sweet up. Jane is the founder of Dermalogica and one of those entrepreneurs who's been in the throes and really grown a company from, bootstrapping it to making it such a national, an international sensation as it is today. And then our leader at the Small Business Administration, Administrator Contreras Sweet, who really has had an entire focus on women since she's been in there. I think really understanding that women are the linchpin of society. They're the ones that are really going to help carry this economy forward. So with that, we're going to have a focused discussion on this very topic.
Monday morning and you're here. This is woman power. I love it. This is what women do now, is they organize on Monday morning. I'm delighted to welcome you also on behalf of the administration as a member of the President's Cabinet and his voice for small business at that table. It's very, just let me say when I say that, I can't see some of the women in the back.
Could I just stand? Is there a way to do this? We make things work, don't we? But anyway, I wanted to say that, as I've traveled now the world representing President Obama, I have learned that just what he did, putting somebody on his cabinet to represent entrepreneurship, is not what you find across the world. So this is something very special just to begin with, just as a platform. So I'm proud that the president's decided to give an equal seat and equal importance. Oh, listen, we're gonna rig this thing.
I like that. This. That's an entrepreneurial
idea. I like
idea.
This. There you go. So anyway, so the point is that I'm delighted to be here to welcome you, and that we do have at SBA so many. It's just a plethora of programs for women. And so I just want to spend 1 minute describing that. Let me just say that at the onset, first of all, as Tina Chen just said, the president not just put us on cabinet, but he also created this very special office that works with women across the country. And our goal at the SBA has been what I call a reframing of what SBA is. We call it smart, bold, and accessible. And what that means to us is that we are deploying every possible smart tool that exists to get more programs to you so that you can be successful. For example, so many women across the country told me that they could not get loans. They just couldn't get the access to capital. So we put up a tool we call LINC, L-I-N-C. I know we're not great at names, but the program works. And what it does is if you come to the SBA website and you click on that, we now ask you to complete a very short survey, and we route your answers to banks that do have an appetite for your credit profile. We're getting more women in that way than ever before. We launched a program because we want women to disrupt, to hack, to just totally transform what they do. I am waiting for a woman to come forward and create a new mammogram machine, for example. All right, you all know. Talk about pain points. So there's so much that we have yet to do. But my great lament when I took office was that I saw that two-thirds of venture capital is concentrated in only 25 zip codes across the country. And you know where those 25 zip codes are? They're in California, New York, and Massachusetts. So we know we have a lot of work to do. So at SBA, we also launched a program to make sure that women got more access to capital. So the BOLD is about bolder market making for women, to get more women to consider the federal government as a customer, to get women to think about the corporate supply chain, and to make moves into the international marketplace. So we worked very closely with the rest of the team at the White House, including Tina Chen, and we were able to get, for the first time in the history of the world, first time ever, we now have a chapter in the trade agreement, the TPP, the proposed TPP. Whether it passes or not, I know that now that you know that there's a small business chapter in it, that it, and the first article for women ever in the history of a trade agreement, we now know that that's going to become the floor on which you will stand. We know that from now on you will always make sure that there was that kind of inclusion in a trade agreement going forward, whether it's TTIP with the UK or elsewhere. So we're committed to that work. The accessible has been just to make sure that women are included in everything. Tina just pointed out, when I arrived, I heard that this federal government, believe it or not, we had a 5% goal. We couldn't reach that goal. For 6 years, we hadn't reached, well, we had never reached the women's goal. And I'll tell you, Aaron and Bruce Purdy and Tamika and everybody at SBA just said, there's no way we're going to leave this town until we complete that goal. So we met with the Department of Defense. We generated a really tough and mean scorecard. I still remember a couple of cabinet members saying to me, wait a second, I saw that on your scorecard you're giving my department a C or a D. We're on the same team. Let's work together. Come on, administrator. And I said, yes, we're on the same team. Let's work together. So get your numbers up. And we did. And I have to tell you that I was so proud to be able to give the president at the next cabinet meeting a successful completion. Not only did we meet our 23% goal, we exceeded it. We got to 25.75, and every percentage point means billions of dollars. The federal government's the largest procurer in the world, and as I said, we finally reached the women's goal. So all of this is great success for you. We could not have done it without you. It is your work. It is because of your evangelism. You are the disciples of change. We want you to keep going and doing this work. So again, on behalf of President Obama, thank you for being here. Let's celebrate the globalness of women and the things that we're doing around the world. I convened the first ever global ministerial to talk about these issues and to try to get more countries to lift entrepreneurship and to put it at their cabinet. We were just sharing with Jane that we just came back from the UK, and it was just wonderful to see that they're now taking a look at it. We're able to go into 10 Downing and talk to the new post-Brexit administration, and they're taking a very hard look at it. We're able, and now we're going to Ireland Thursday, so we're continuing to do the work until the very last day. We will continue to lift women. Let me just say what a delight it is to have so many of you. We all have a similar story. We all believe in entrepreneurship. But when I heard the comments, I don't want you to think about growing small businesses. I want you to think about growing big businesses. We want to get you started, and then we want to take you to scale. And it has been my great joy to see so many women around the world, and particularly in the U.S. now, scaling. And so here we have one great example. And this is what's so exciting, is that we have Jane in the house. So I'm going to drop this. I'm going to back down and let her stand up and just tell her story. I'm going to ask her to stand up because We have very similar stories, Jane.
I know.
I'll just do this standing up.
Yeah.
Do you want to do that?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. So I have to tell you that we have a story in common, first of all. We're both immigrants.
Yeah.
You know, I came in from Mexico at the age of 5, didn't know a word of English, and it was through entrepreneurship. It was my mother couldn't get a corporate or a government job, so she worked in a small business, a family-owned company, and I've done the same. And now I've created 3 different businesses. And you have a similar story.
Sure.
It's amazing when we first met, the administrator and I, and we shared our story. We were like, oh, he's snap. Okay, well, that's the same. I know that you're 1 of 6. I'm 1 of 4. I'm an immigrant from the UK and came here in 1983. And I came knowing English, so that was a big win to start with. The second win was I had a suitcase with me, and in that suitcase was my diploma from beauty school. And that was my ticket, like Willy Wonka's golden ticket in the chocolate bar. That was my ticket when I came to the States that I was going to be able to work. I was going to be able to get a job. I knew I was going to be able to provide a service and that I would be okay. I came with my boyfriend, who then became my husband. He's here in the room with me today, Raymond, with our
Raymond,
2 daughters.
Stand up. Where's Raymond?
He's right there.
Oh, very nice.
With our 2 daughters. And we arrived blissfully unaware. There was a 10.4% unemployment rate in the state of California then, 1983. So we set about deciding what we were going to do, and we were going to be entrepreneurs, and we were going to start our own business. And I think the 5 words that were the most important words ever said to me in my life was my mother, who said to me and my 3 sisters, learn how to do something. And she knew that very personally because she was a qualified nurse, and she had had to fall back on that training when she was widowed at age 38 with 4 girls to raise. I was 2 years old when my dad died. And so she would say to my sisters and I, what would I have done without my education, without my training? And so I went from high school to study skincare. I became a skin therapist, an esthetician, as many of you might call us. But at Dermalogica, we're kind of rebellious, so we redefine our language, and we call ourselves skin therapists. And so we started off as a family knowing that if we didn't know how to do something, we wouldn't be able to provide food, literally. So that became my ticket. And when I emigrated to the United States, Raymond and I started an educational school, the International Dermal Institute. We then went on to develop Dermalogica. And the amazing thing about that story was we started on $14,000 of self-funding. We were new immigrants. We couldn't have thought of applying for a loan. We wouldn't have got a loan. We wouldn't have got a bank account. We rustled together $14,000 of self-funding. We started the company. We bootstrapped it up. We never took outside funding. We never gave away any equity. And we scaled the business to last year a wholesale turnover of a little over $240 million. We're in 107 countries. Thank you. Thank you. And we scaled the business all the way through. The reason being our business model was to sell to salon owners. And the statistic for salon owners is 61% of all salons are owned by women. It is the largest industry for women business owners and entrepreneurs in the world. And I'm really excited that we have several of our skin therapists in the room. Kessie, who came all the way down from New York, who went through our vocational training program, has an amazing job in New York City. And 4 of our future professionals who are right now going through their vocational training, and they will work behind the chair. They will then work in their own businesses, I'm sure, because our industry puts more women into their own business. So that's my story, and of course, we both got our start in California. So.
Well, wait a second. There's a big part of the story that everybody's interested in. You didn't just create movement. You created a category. Yeah. I mean, when I was growing up, cosmetics were cosmetics, and you were the first one to come in and to say, as you just said, it's a therapy, it's a pharmaceutical, and created this cosmeceutical category. You were the forerunner to that. Tell us how you thought about that. I think that's really fascinating.
Yeah, so
you were a disruptor.
Very disruptive. Although that wasn't the word then. I remember one time one of our staff gave me a skull and crossbones flag to fly up the flagpole underneath our of course, stars and stripes. So I was really proud of that because we felt we were rebels and rebellious, and now the word would be disruptor. what happened was when we were looking at developing a product line and training, I had always felt that the industry I had been trained into was called the beauty industry. At Dermalogica, we call that the B word because we don't use it. It's not about beauty. It's about skin health and wellness and really great business opportunities. And so we looked at the industry and we said we need to develop a product that is a cross between a cosmetic and a pharmaceutical. Am I rattling? Oh, thank you. It's a cross between a cosmetic and a pharmaceutical, but the word cosmeceutical hadn't really been made up then. And so Dermalogica, the name and the packaging, all looked reminiscent of a pharmaceutical product. We believed the future of the industry was going to be a lot more serious, a lot less about superficial cosmetic application, which is fine, but to me, makeup sits in that category, and it's a personal choice, whereas skin health is really for every single person from birth all the way through. You start with a sunblock at 6 months old all the way through. That was our mantra, was this is about bringing your skin to its optimum level of health and condition. And that created a category, and I truly believe it created an opportunity, which was a greater opportunity for small businesses to scale into that category, because suddenly it became part of healthcare. And this was 1986 when we launched Dermalogica. It was before the doctor brands. Dermatologists were not developing their own products. They were basically recommending Crisco and Ivory soap and telling us that nothing we did made a difference, and it was all creaming and steaming and didn't really do anything. And boy, has the world changed, because now you can look at any of the shelves in any of the salons or stores and you see Dr. Brands. But that wasn't the case then. We created this disruptive category that so many businesses then got their start in. And really excited to say that 7,000 of those businesses are the salons in the United States that we supply. And they've gone on. And the interesting thing is, right now, the category of skincare specialist in the salon industry has a 40% projected job growth between now and 2020 by the U.S. Department of Labor. We are second only to tech in the opportunity for growth.
That's amazing.
Yeah. That's I know. I said the same. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, something else, Jane. It wasn't lost on me when you said that you kept it private.
Yes.
That is an incredible feat for all of. I've started 3 different businesses. I can tell you how difficult that is. My 3rd one had to go public, to be able to scale it up. So I'd really be interested in knowing, because everybody here wants to know about Access Capital, right?
Yeah.
So could you take us through the your capital journey as well?
I will. So we started on $14,000 of self-funding. So how are you going to scale on that? What are you going to do? The first thing was that we never spent any money on anything unnecessary, including clothing. Not that we were running around naked, but Raymond and I had a moratorium. We weren't buying anything that we didn't absolutely need for 3 years. We took $300 a month out of the business for the first 3 years. We did not draw salary. Raymond kept a job as a sales rep for a skincare equipment company. We lived on his salary, which was very low, I think it was $1,000 a month. We had a 1-bedroom apartment in Marina Del Rey. We had our sales manager who had emigrated here to join us that we'd worked with before, slept on our floor on a futon for 1.5 years. We were frugal. A big night out was, macaroni cheese that I made at home. So, and box wine, which, was never a bad idea. So we scaled because we focused on only spending what we needed to, and we focused on small businesses that everyone was ignoring. The Harvard Business Review in 2003 wrote an article on us, and I don't like the title, but it was the cover page. It was called Bottom Feeders. I know, right? Kind of rude. But the context of it was interesting. What they said was that we had seen an opportunity in very small businesses that had pretty bad credit that nobody wanted to supply product to because they wouldn't be able to offer them credit and terms. Well, the salon professional industry is a COD business. It always was and it still is. So we shipped everything UPS COD. And we were paid. Our cash flow was positive immediately. We supplied small businesses, often single owner operator, that could not get credit, and they were happy to pay COD, and everyone else was ignoring them. Everyone else was saying they're not big enough to really bother about. They're only going to order a few thousand dollars a year. Raymond and I said, we need to go shallow, like small businesses, and wide. Shallow and wide. Everyone else was going an inch wide and a mile deep. They were looking for the big companies. And when I hear people say, you know, I really want to get into Whole Foods, or I really want to get into, you know, Bloomingdale's, right? We avoided every single business that would require terms. Our sales force would say, we've got a huge order for $25,000 from a big spa in Las Vegas. And Ray and I would say, no. And they'd say, they used to say we were the sales prevention team. They say, why not? And we'd say, because they'll want 120 days, we cannot carry the debt. We're not carrying the debt. We'd never wanted to put our eggs in a basket that anyone had leverage on our business. And if they didn't pay us, we couldn't survive. So we kept everything, cash on delivery, small businesses. We built relationships with those businesses. We trained those entrepreneurs, those skin therapists. We didn't just train them in technique, we trained them in how to run their business, how to hire staff, how much do you pay a front desk person, should you pay them commission, do you pay them the same commission as the skin therapist in the room. We trained everything from source your trolleys from Target to buy your cotton squares from a medical supply. We became the resource for those small businesses. And we reminded them and thanked them every day and said, if you are not successful, if you can't scale, we can't scale. So we're in it together and you are going to scale. We're going to drag you kicking, screaming, and biting if necessary to your optimum level of success. Because if you don't get there, we're not getting there, and we are definitely getting there. So it became this tribal anthem of we were tiny, teeny but not weeny. We were small businesses, but we were scrappy. We were going to build our clients, and we were going to keep them. And I used to say to the skin therapist, because I am one myself, you need 265 clients to have a full book. 265. Write it at the top of your book every single day. Every single client, take care of them. Make sure they come back. Rebook them before they leave. Do not let them leave. Don't let them go anywhere else. You must secure them, and we will teach you how. I mean, it became... We were like zealots. We were out there. We were calling our salons. We were saying, how did you do today? Did you introduce that service? How fast can you wax a bikini line? 12 minutes is too slow. It's got to be 7 minutes. I mean, I would do videos. We would send them out teaching them how to do it. We were relentless in making those small entrepreneurs successful. And that not just built our business, it built an incredible industry that all believed in the same mission.
I was another applause. Come on. That was phenomenal. That was just phenomenal. Okay. Now, what we just interviewed a couple of weeks ago, we had a similar meeting with Kevin Plank. He came to SBA. No one believed that you could put technology in clothing. And this young man said, I believe it can. I think we can disrupt apparel. And came in and asked us for a loan after having been turned down all over town here by everybody. And we funded him with $250,000, SBA did, a local bank. And as a result, he's now the founder of Under Armour. Fantastic. And so it's just incredible. But you and he sound alike in your passion, as you said. You're zealots. You know, it's just like, it's a campaign, right? It's just all out. What I want to know is, and I think the group would be interested in knowing, is you said, we're going to succeed. You have to, because we are going to. There was a sense of exceptionalism. There was a sense of confidence. You didn't blink. You didn't let anything stand in your way. You knew your metrics, and you created the atmosphere that you needed to be able to thrive. You created that atmosphere.
Yes.
Now, one of the challenges that we find across the country is girls don't always feel that way about themselves. So how were you raised? Tell us how it was at home that gives you this gumption, this sense of, you know, confidence. Talk to us about that.
Well, as you can imagine, my mom was widowed. She was raising the four girls. She was working as often as she could. I mean, she was working a night shift. She was coming home at 7 in the morning. She was sleeping a couple of hours, getting up at about 9 o'clock to take care of me. My sisters went to school. They came home at 4. She went to sleep at 4, slept for another couple of hours, and then went to work. So it was a very high work ethic. So I grew up in that. I also became a Brownie, a Girl Scout, went to an all-girls school. So you might say that I was kind of totally prepared for a women's industry. It never occurred to me that women couldn't and didn't and shouldn't do everything, because that was what I saw modeled around me all the time. But I will say something, because I read and hear a lot about girls need more self-esteem, girls need more confidence, they don't speak up, we need to get them to step up, we need to get them to lean in, everything that we're all familiar with the rhetoric. But I will say that I don't know that you can actually teach that. I believe what happens is when you learn how to do something and you suddenly realize, wow, I can do this. I can earn money at this. I can own this. I'm going to be okay. I can take care of myself. I believe knowing how to do something instills that confidence and self-esteem. I think it's hard to say to a young person who's really struggling and feeling a little desperate about what the future might be, you need to be more confident. Let's build up your self-esteem. Where is it coming from? We build on that self-esteem, and I believe the foundation of that is when you say, wow, you know, I can do this. I know when we teach in our training centers, we have 40 training centers, we teach 100,000 skin therapists every year around the world. When we teach our skin therapists and we teach future entrepreneurs, future professionals, and our future professionals master a technique, and we see that moment, that aha moment where they go, wow, I think I can do this. And it could be a movement. It could be a massage movement. It could be waxing. But there's this moment of, wait a minute, I think I can do this. And we go, you've got it. You've got it. You can do it. And they go, wow. There's an aha moment where we see in that person's face, not only can I do it, I like doing this. I'm good at this. I'm going to be good at this. And sometimes it's the first time they've really thought, I can do it. I'm going to be fine. I'm employable. There's a 40% job growth predicted. 61% of the salons are owned by women. This could be my shot. That is when the light bulb goes off. And once that happens, that person is unstoppable. And so as crazy as it might seem, I promise you that when I walk around a new city, I sometimes say to myself, okay, if everything disappeared, heaven forbid, what would you do? And I know I could leave this building now. I could knock on the door of every salon I come to. And by the way, I saw about 25 of them in Georgetown yesterday. I've never seen so many salons in a 3-block radius in my life, right? I could knock, we could all knock on those doors, and I promise you by the end of today or tomorrow, I will have a job. I know that because I have a very saleable skill. I can wax a bikini line in 7 minutes. And those of you in the room, you know, that's golden. And as silly as that might seem, as trivial as that might be, I can't tell you what that has always done for my confidence. I know how to do something. And that's why for me, skill set driven training, purpose-driven education, or in California now, we introduced 2 years ago a big vocational training piece into high schools. It got a big funding opportunity of over $50 million, and the premise was job-driven education. And I have to tell you, in the state of California, for those students that have stayed in high school through graduation and pursued the job-driven education track, we have a 91% graduation, which is extremely high. California, LAUSD was tracking over a 50% dropout rate in some of our schools. This is huge, because those students graduate knowing how to do something and realizing they have a skill set that they can earn money on and potentially open their own business.
You know, I have to, yes. Yes. You can tell why Jane and I have become such good friends. We have so much passion for the same things. I have to tell you, when I was a poli sci student, and I was just trying to, you know, figure out I was going to run some education office because I wanted to help other people learn, and that was my intent. And then this gentleman saw me in action at some conference and came to me, he was the president of Westinghouse for the region at the time, and he came to me and he said, you know, I'd like for you to join our company. And I said, I'm a poli-sci major. I'm running a senator's office. What am I going to do for you at Westinghouse? And he said, look at what you do every day. He said, you are running a campaign, so you're trying to get people who think, you know, this way, and you're trying to move them over through the process of a campaign to get them to vote for, you know, your senator. And he said, we get people who like red cans, because they're asking me to help them run the 7-Up division they had just acquired. They said, we get people who like red cans and move them over to begin to like green cans. And he took me through the process. He says, skills are transferable.
Yes.
And that was so powerful to me. And so what you're talking about, education, that I thought, gee, I'm a poli-sci major, you know, I'm working in the senator's office, this is what I do. And he just helped me think about it. And I went home that night and thought, what are my innate skills? And how do they break down? And how are they applicable in so many other ways?
And so that for me was my aha moment.
Yes.
And then I went into the private sector and learned, you know, ISO certification, ideation, Kanban inventory, all the processes and the metrics, and then left with all those skills to start my three different businesses. Okay. The last one, of course, being a community bank. But I found that, as you say, now I have such confidence about, you know, it's sort of like I'm so comfortable with my core skills that you can put me in anywhere and I feel I'm going to rise to the top. Do you
you'll
know?
Navigate your way through.
You will navigate. And I think that for each of us, it has given me a sense of freedom. So when I worked at Westinghouse, as an example, once I figured that out, I thought, I don't really need this job. So I'm here to contribute to them because I'm so comfortable with what I can contribute. And that gave me more confidence, a little bit more ability to take risks and move the ball forward for the company. And they saw that, and you know, then I became an officer and so forth, an equity partner in the business eventually. But it's that sense of confidence that really does drive me. And then, you know, then all of a sudden the governor called and asked me to run the state transportation system in California, which is a whole lot of fun. And then to be called to serve, you know, to run entrepreneurship for the country and in some sense lead it for the world has really been extraordinary. So I say to you that what you just said, Jane, is so powerful to me. I think that the more of us realize that, that we have to be comfortable with our core skills and their application can be universal.
Yes.
And I think that's really important to think about. Like, what are your core competencies? And then how do you kind of apply them in whichever field of endeavor you're going to undertake? And I think that's very powerful. How are we doing time-wise? Okay, she's telling me to write. Well, then I have, because now you've had a successful exit, and this is what we all want. We all want a successful exit, and so you can be proud that now you've built a global brand. But what I love most about every interview that I get to do around these, whether it was Qualcomm in San Diego, another gentleman who came to SBIR and now has built a global company, what I find is that they're committed to impact. It's not just about profit and branding, it's about having a positive impact and change on the world in a very positive way. You're now creating this great program called FITE. So would you tell us about what your goal is and how you came to that decision and how people can benefit from that here?
Thank you. Well, we at Dermalogica, we believe every single brand, no matter what category you're in, really should have a social impact, and it should be baked into the brand. It shouldn't be part of your HR or somebody who handles the philanthropy. It needs to be baked into the global marketing initiative. And so in 2010, we determined that our best social impact was going to be women entrepreneurs. That was my story. It was the story of our industry. 98% of all skin therapists are women. So this is an industry dominated by women. It's a social and economic powerhouse for women. So we determined, we set about creating a social impact called FITE. We call it FITE. It stands for financial independence through entrepreneurship. We made a commitment in 2010 to partner with Kiva, who is the largest online funding opportunity, to put 25,000 women into their own business in a two-year period. We hit the 25,000 number in 18 months, and so far we've funded over 80,000 women around the world. So, thank you. But we've used our industry, the salon industry, as a blueprint of entrepreneurship, even though those women are in many industries, from agriculture to textiles. And now we've become very strong in thought leadership. We focus on education. And we're right now, the first part of 2017, we're launching a brand new, what we're calling a global entrepreneurship accelerator. We've partnered with Operation Hope. And they are writing a financial literacy piece of us. We're going to be working with the SBA to put in a lot of the amazing content and information that we have on our website at the SBA. And we're going to be writing, from our perspective, how you build and run a successful salon. We're putting all of that education that we've been in education for over 30 years, putting everything online. We're going to make it free and available to every entrepreneur in the salon industry, regardless. It has nothing to do with product. This this has everything to do with their business. We're going to link our entrepreneurs up so that they have mentoring and they have sharing opportunities, because we know that it's important as a startup entrepreneur to have a campfire to come to and to be able to share your stories and learn from each other. And we're very excited that that's going to go live the first part of next year, completely free to every salon entrepreneur. And we're going to put all of our effort and energy as the number one skincare brand in getting that message out and making sure that information, all the links, get in the hands of every entrepreneur that we can possibly track down and drag into the circle and make them successful. And I have to tell you, right now, standing here, this opening of Global Entrepreneurs Week, and especially in light of every recent event, we are even more determined to make that mark for women entrepreneurs. Because without our women entrepreneurs, we will not have a successful future economy. We need them. It's the game changer. Wow.
Replicate you.
Well, I want to thank the administrator too for really making this possible. Thank you, Administrator Sweet, and we're very, very sad and sorry to see you moving on to other new opportunities, which I'm sure will be amazing, and we will be right there along with you, whatever they are.
Oh, thank you. Speaking of, let me just say, I didn't get a chance to introduce myself more fully to some of the new people, the new guests that we've had here today, but the reason we love each other so much, as I was mentioning, is that we both came from other countries. Through entrepreneurship, we've sort of made our way through life in some way, and the values that you espouse are so incredibly dear to me. My grandmother, I was talking about my grandmother because I think, you know, for all of us, it was always our grandmother who inspired us so much, and my grandmother Amelia was so much that way. And I still remember when I wrote her, we didn't have Google or Gmail in those days, and I wrote her and I said, "Grandmother, I've become the fourth grade milk monitor in this new country of mine." And she said, "It's not the titles, it's what you do with the titles that you have that matters." And so I've tried in every which way, however humble, you know, in some small measure, to help other people along, founded a women's organization, because my passion is to get women to be politically engaged. And so mine was about, how do I create an institute to get more women involved in the political process? Regardless of what party you belong to, I felt that it was important to have people engaged to ensure our democracy. And so I still believe that and still encourage people that whether you're running a business, you work in government, a nonprofit, that you do be engaged in the political process. And so that's always been sort of my avocation all the time that I was at Westinghouse in my own business and running the bank, to try to have a voice there. And I have to tell you that, you know, it has served me, and I hope that, you know, as I travel across the country and I see women who have graduated from that institute, it gives me such a great sense of pride and harkens back to when my grandmother said that although she had been a migrant worker, that she believed that someday through entrepreneurship, building my own business, providing for myself, and building a legacy for my children, that I might be able to someday work in an office and be a secretary. And so the good Lord heard her and allowed me to hold office and to be a cabinet secretary. That is the power of entrepreneurship. And so I believe in this so deeply, that through entrepreneurship we can expand democracies, deepen them, expand the middle class, and be able to provide for our families in ways that we never mentioned. So I'll close with what I think is my favorite quote of the president's, and he says that entrepreneurship is the most powerful force the world has ever seen to lift people out of poverty. We must, at this day, as we kick off Global Entrepreneurship Week, dedicate ourselves, each of us collectively and individually, to go out and to change the world. Remember that when you now light up your website, you are engaged in global commerce. So embrace it. Don't run away from it. Find your difference and use it as the wind to your back to connect with somebody, whether it's in Peru or in Kenya or it's in the UK. Connect and build new partnerships, because the global entrepreneurship scenario, excuse me, the global commerce is not just for big business, it's got to be for the entrepreneur as well. So I hope that you'll come to SBA to learn about our Office of International Trade. I saw Tamika here, who runs our counseling operation. Erin runs our women's office. Obviously, Antonella runs the incredible network that we have
of women business centers throughout the country that I hope that you'll partake of. And there are so many people here from SBA that I know will stand up and work with you and give you a sense of direction. But I already know these women are already empowered, so you wouldn't be here otherwise. But know that anything is possible, and together we will and we can, and we will change the world. God bless you. God bless the United States of America. Thank you so much. Thank you.